WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. The FDA has granted the first traditional approval to a new kind of Alzheimer's treatment. CBS's Alexander Tin reports.
The FDA now says that Alzheimer's drug Leqembi, which was granted so-called accelerated approval earlier this year, has now been converted to a traditional approval after a study from drug makers Eisai and Biogen verified that Leqembi could benefit patients facing early signs of Alzheimer's. Now that Leqembi has gotten the FDA's traditional approval, Medicare says it will now begin to cover the Alzheimer's treatment as long as patients enroll in registry programs to track real-world evidence on the drug's usefulness.
The drug's prescribing information will carry the most serious type of warning, indicating that Leqembi can cause brain swelling and bleeding, side effects that can be dangerous in rare cases. Several counties in western New York were under a heat advisory today. This Buffalo resident hit the pool.
Really good to have as an option, especially when it's 90 degrees out. You know, it's too hot.
The extreme heat also stretches from the southwest to southern Florida. It's the hottest week globally on record. Odyssey New York meteorologist Craig Allen says it's warm, even where it should be very cold.
Compared to climate records from back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, even up to 2000, that temperatures right now down in the Antarctic are as much as 15 to 35 degrees above where they should be.
The story of a Houston teenager being found alive 8 years after going missing appears to be just that, a story. Police now believe he had been living with his mother the entire time. Reporter Chris Fox has more.
Rudy Farias was 17 years old when his mother reported him missing in March 2015. A week ago, he was found lying on the ground outside of a Houston church. Police are now saying they don't believe Farias went missing at all. Lieutenant Christopher Zamora.
It was discovered that Rudy returned home the following day on March 8th, 2015. The mother, Janie, continued to deceive police by remaining adamant that Rudy was still missing.
No false report charges filed so far. Farias's aunts believe their sister is guilty.
She's always been manipulative. She's a very greedy person.
Chris Fox for CBS News, Austin.
The Biden administration is expected to announce tomorrow that the Pentagon will send thousands of cluster munitions as part of a new $800,000 military aid package to Ukraine. It comes despite widespread concerns that the controversial bombs can cause civilian casualties. Pentagon Press Secretary General Patrick Ryder says,
I would note that the Russians have already been employing cluster munitions on the battlefield, many with which include a very high dud rate reportedly.
Stocks close lower on Wall Street. This is CBS News.
Find great hires fast with Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring solution makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
You're listening to a radio station that's part of the Civic Media Network. Find more at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Here's what you need to know in Southeast Wisconsin. A fatal Shorewood shooting this morning is under investigation.
One victim was transported to the hospital for treatment. One victim is deceased. The suspect has been located, and there's no longer any threat to the public.
Captain Fernando Santiago with Shorewood Police told WISN 12 that the shots were fired at around 4 this morning. Two workers at the West Dallas Fireworks Show were injured as a result of a firework misfire. That's according to West Dallas Police. The incident Tuesday night happened when a firework shell failed to ignite correctly, resulting in an explosion at the launch site. An investigation is going on. Those workers are recovering. The final weekend of the world's largest music festival is underway. Folks going to Summerfest Saturday can get free admission from noon until 3. For Civic Media News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup.
Yes, that's awesome.
Starting at 6 AM, Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Grave Digger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crute. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show. On 540 AM WAUK. UK. Day.
Hey, Dan Kelly, you went around the state saying there had been fraud and the election should be overturned. You did that. You took $120,000 in pay from the Republican Party, not in a donation, pay. The most recent payment was in December, and we don't know if you're still being paid. And you've been endorsed by some of the biggest election deniers in the state. And you're shying to me with, I don't know how I'd rule. I know how you'd rule. I know how you'd rule.
Matt Flynn Direct, weekday afternoons from 3 until 4 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app. Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station.
You're listening to a Civic Media radio station. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
He deserves protections.
Good. We will take what we can get. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about Bidenomics. Bidenomics working. The numbers have come out for the June job numbers. Wow. Yeah, I know that my Republican friends hoping, wishing, working for recession, want to see some bad news. Because I was told these job numbers, well, you think they're going to be good. They're not. They're going to flatten out, I was told. I was told to expect somewhere around 200,000. Dow was expecting 220. They had, revised some things down in May. 497,000 jobs for the month. That is the biggest monthly increase since July of 2022. And this is one of those things where you go, I know the economic talking heads, I know what the right-wing politicos are wishing and hoping for, but the economy seems to be rolling right along, even as the Fed is trying to slam on the brakes. From a sectoral standpoint, they're saying that the hospitality and leisure sector added 232,000 new jobs in the month, 97,000 construction jobs, and 90,000 in transportation and utilities. Now, this is one of those things where you go, wow, things are going good. Wages increased by 6.4%. That means, well, things are getting better for working people. Now, of course, it's inflationary. These increased wages, it's going to mean, it's going to be inflation. And look, I had one of those conversations today. Had one of those conversations with a friend today. Good friend. Telling me, I'm so concerned. All I hear about is, they keep saying we're spending this money and it's causing all this inflation. And I'm concerned it's going to erode, my pension. It's going to erode all this other stuff. And my mind is like, if we had stronger unions, if we had better bargaining power, because corporate America is wildly profitable, doing wildly well. I argue that the inflation that we're suffering under is by choice. Corporate America is sticking it to us at every opportunity. And the fact that wages are starting to creep up a little bit, I think that's a good thing. That could be very helpful. Now, the 97,000 construction jobs, that to me, very, very important. Means we're rebuilding stuff, means we're doing something, means we're bringing some manufacturing back. The reason I bring this up, Wall Street Journal today had a really telling article. Something you may have heard here on the program for the last 18 years, but it's good to know that the Wall Street Journal, the newspaper of the investor class, it's nice to know that they're finally coming around. Maybe someone was tuning into the program, heard something. They go, oh, this is important. Because it is. The headline, the West again learns that war needs industry. And they point out that behind the lines in Ukraine and, you know, with Russia is, you know, is stuff. You need to have supply lines. You need to have guns. You need to have ammunition. You need to have stuff. Tires. Tires a big thing. And good ones. Not those cheap, crappy Chinese ones. But actually good tires. So that you can get out of the mud. Learn that right from the beginning. And I like how in the article they said, you know, Russia and Ukraine, they're battling this out. And, you know, it's a lesson. This is what they wrote. It's a lesson Washington is relearning. And I'll point out that our friends over at the Alliance for American Manufacturing did a pretty substantial report a decade ago laying out all the deficiencies in our supply chain for our military. And it's only gotten worse over the last decade. And so if it's one of these things where we go, well, Washington's relearning it, I don't know. I think Joe Biden is moving us in the right direction. Again, ending the neoliberal nonsense of outsourcing jobs and corporatizing profits and socializing losses and harming working people by gutting their wages and their benefits. I'm thrilled about the way Biden's taking us. But it's interesting to see the Wall Street Journal, the newspaper of the investor class, saying, you should probably think of this. And they're right. We should. And that's why Biden is out doing his cross-country tour, getting out the message about rebuilding our economy, rebuilding our country, the Investing in America tour. South Carolina today, talking about the jobs that are going to be created, and one in particular, this Enphase, is in South Carolina. It's going to create nationwide about 1,800 jobs, 600 in North Carolina. Its manufacturing partner, Flex, going to create some of these jobs. Now, me personally, I get why Biden's in South Carolina. James Clyburn, we want to try and compete there. I'd still love to see these jobs in Michigan or Pennsylvania or Wisconsin or Illinois or, you know, any of the states that have been decimated by Reaganomics and deindustrialization. But bringing these jobs back is a good thing. New creations of jobs, a good thing here. And back to the Wall Street Journal piece, the newspaper of the investor class. They seem in favor of now reshoring manufacturing. Because I think rich people are going, hey, well, we can make some more money now. Because they were afraid they were going to get gutted over in China. Because they were. But the president was in South Carolina touting his plans, which is billions of dollars going, for roads and bridges, broadband access. And, of course, tunnels. There's a giant tunnel project in New York. Anybody who's ever ridden public transit into New York knows needs help. Anyone who's ever driven into New York City knows needs help. Need to get people off the road and into public transit. Need to make it easier to get in and out of the city. There is a $6.88 billion tunnel program. It is the most ever awarded to a mass transit project in this country. And what I want to see is, look, I want to see a giant statue. I want to see a giant Joe Biden going, I did that. I want to see a massive Joe Biden going, I did that. You know, the job numbers. He should be coming out going, yeah, me, this guy right here. The B-man. Jelly Bucket Joe, here I am. Builder Biden. because Democrats don't do this well. You know, if Trump had had just, you know, a smidgen of the success that Biden's had, you would have never heard the end of it. It would be nonstop. And this is where Democrats got to pull your heads out of the sand and say, look, I know Joe Biden can't get a sentence out, so let's get it out for him. Biden did this stuff. It's Biden's plans. It's Biden's policies. It's what they pushed through. And we need it. This is the thing. And, you know, I had someone email me and say, hey, you need to talk to this guy in Minnesota because of the Minnesota miracle. Because they're taking some of this money and they are rebuilding their states and their state and the jobs that are being created. Again, this isn't rocket science. This is pretty simple, basic, just common sense economics. If you bring money in to build something, you're going to create good union construction jobs. Those jobs are going to have a reverberation effect across the entire local economy. Because those construction workers are going to need clothes, they're going to need meals, they're going to need housing. They're going to, down the list. That means other jobs. That means hospitality jobs. The fact that, what, how many hospitality jobs? 232,000 across the country. Those are people going back to working in bars and restaurants and serving people who have what? You can say it, disposable income. I know it's something that we've kind of forgotten, but it's something we got to fight for. So as I'm looking at this moment, this is good stuff. And the fact that Biden's approval ratings are so down in the dumps is incredible to me. And it speaks volumes to the power of right-wing messaging. Speaks volumes to the power of the F channel and their copycats. Speaks volumes to negativity. You know, all I've heard about the last couple of days, everyone's emailing me, it's Cocaine Gate. There's cocaine all over the place. Biden's doing coke on the Resolute desk. No, he's not. If he were, he would be much more energetic. And look, I love Joe Biden. And I think the guy is doing the right stuff. But you got to realize, you know, he's getting up there. And, you know, as someone asked me, do you want him as president? Yeah, I want his policies, man. I want what he's brought. I want the vision of where he wants us to go. I want to reshore our manufacturing. I want to be the world's manufacturer again. I want to be what we were 30, 40 years ago. I want to be that bridge in Trenton, New Jersey that says Trenton makes, the world takes. I want that to be a reality. I want those jobs to be here. I want those products to be here. I want the innovation, the entrepreneurial spirit. I want all that stuff here. Because we let policymakers, we let politicians funded by greedy CEOs undo the most powerful economy that this planet has ever seen. And why? So that they could make more and you could make less. So they could crush those unions. They could crush those workers who, you know, 40 years ago were making $20, $25 an hour. With the best health care you could possibly get and a defined benefit pension. They ruined all of that. They ruined the American dream. They ruined the middle class. They ruined what my grandparents fought for. And it's our job to claw that back. And we finally got a guy in the White House who gets it. Finally, a guy in the White House is saying, policy-wise, we need to undo the horrible of the past. So I give Joe Biden credit. I give him credit for you know, head on. Take in the right-wing nonsense, and this is the greatest part. You don't see him engaging any of that. He's just showing up, doing his job. Jelly Bucket Joe on the job, man. So I want him to get 4 more years. I want to see what we can do in the next 4 years to reshore our manufacturing and create the jobs of the future. I do. Want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you will find ours. Quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, oh, let the fun begin. You knew the Republican-led House was going to be entertaining. You know it. You knew from the beginning that they couldn't help themselves. They were going to end up eating their own. And today they did. Today they did. The Freedom Caucus. You know, the Tea Party folks, the ones out on the fringe, the Scott Perrys. Scott, pardon me, Perry, my congressman. Evidently, they ate one of their own today, claiming that Marjorie Trainwreck Greene is not conservative enough. She's not enough of a lunatic, so she's out. And I'm like, wow, that is impressive. And I love the fact that they gave her the ouster. So that is good. Now, here's another one of my favorite things. I had to sign up for Threads today, and I'm not a Facebook person. Not a big Facebook person. We post stuff occasionally, just about the show. I don't engage in a lot, but I had to sign up for Threads today, if for no other reason than to thumb my nose at Elon Musk over Twitter, because evidently they're not pleased with the competition. Now, remember, it was all about free speech. I feel sorry for the woman who became the CEO that Elon brought in to eat that giant you-know-what sandwich. I liken her to the Devin Nunes. So she's going to be the new Devin Nunes. She tweeted out that, you know, Twitter's the place for free speech. And, you know, I don't even think she believes this. But I had to sign up for the Threads as for no other reason than to make a bigger number for Elon to get angry about. And now, evidently, they've threatened to sue. Threatening to sue. And I'm waiting to see how that plays out. Should be entertaining. Now, on social media, what's going on? You got Donald Trump doing what he does. And it is all about being as reckless as ever. Evidently, he re-truthed or sub-truthed or whatever that is over there. What was Obama's home address? He had crazy guy out front with some guns. And Chris Christie, and look, I'm not a Chris Christie fan, but good on him for slamming Trump for sharing Obama's address. But understand what Trump wants. Trump wants somebody taken out. He wants the poorly educated, the dim, to go after these people. And, you know, violence and intimidation works. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Kurt from Akron on line one. Kurt, how are you?
Hey, good evening, Rick, and thank you for taking my call.
What's on your mind, brother?
Well, you know what disgusted me more today about that speech down in South Carolina that President Biden gave today?
Do tell.
Not one major media outlet covered it.
Yeah.
That disgusts me in the sense that, you know, you got a twice impeached, twice indicted former president who gets all this billion-dollar free advertising whenever he even makes a fart. And Joe Biden has a great policy speech. And I will say he's not the greatest speaker in the world, but he gets the job done. And yet the media won't cover it because he's not entertaining enough for the people. Yeah. It goes back to your poorly educated thing you just said, too. But, you know, another thing that I wonder the media will even, well, I even heard it today on Tom Hartman, that there was supposed to be like a little over or a little under 300,000 jobs created for the month of June.
Yep.
And apparently we have just a little under 500,000 jobs that were created.
497,000. Yep. If any of that would have happened during the Trump years, you would have never heard the end of it.
Exactly. Exactly. And then if you heard it during the Obama years, Trump would have said, oh, those are fake numbers.
Yeah, heads I win, tails you lose.
Exactly. Exactly. And I just, and as far as this whole Obama address thing, I just don't get it with Donald Trump and his troth central or whatever.
Oh, I do. I completely get it, Kurt. It's all about intimidating people. It's all about threatening and harassing. It's all about engaging the dim among us to go do violent things to make prosecutors are being threatened. I mean, he wants people showing up at people's homes and intimidating them.
Did he say that Jack Smith was a cokehead on there too?
Yeah. Look,
and then get this. He retrosted or whatever you want to call it, some meme that someone put on his platform about 81 million votes.
Yeah.
And I've never seen in my life a pro Biden hat, flag or shirt or something of that nature. And I'm going to clean this up where it said, let's go Brandon. And you know what I mean by that. And then it said, let's go Brandon to anyone who voted for Biden. That's a real classy former president. Wouldn't you say?
As I put on social media, this is presidential now, I guess. And is this the kind of guy you want in the White House? Someone who's going to repost the F Biden flag? And no, I would hope, you know, I would hope people would be angry enough to say, no, we're going to throw this clown to the curb. But, you know, the cult, Kurt.
It is. And it's like I had a problem with a guy today on social media where I tweeted that speech from the White House YouTube channel today. And he said right away, well, you know, everything he says is just a lie. And it's getting to the point where, are these people lied to so much that they don't even know what the truth is when it's finally told to them? You know, yeah. Kind of like Harry Truman says, how many times do you have to be hit on the head before you figure out who's hitting you?
Absolute truth. Truth. Good stuff, Kurt. Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Thank you. And you have a good night.
You as well. The reality is what it is. He wants to incite violence. They want the cult to go and do the things that they're going to do. Now, it's interesting. I had a while ago, you may remember this for people who have been listening for a while. I had someone tell me, you know, Carrie Lake's going to be the vice president. It'd be Trump and Carrie Lake. And I said, it's never going to be Carrie Lake. Never, ever, ever will you see Carrie Lake as his vice president. And look, I'm going to continue with this. Evidently now some of the insiders in the Trump world are saying that, Donald's kind of cooling on her. Now, if you remember, what I said was there's no way an egomaniac like Trump can be in the same room with someone who takes away from him, who detracts from him. He's never going to put someone on the ticket who's going to be more interesting. Mike Pence was the perfect milquetoast candidate to go along with Trump. He was. Nobody noticed he was in the room. Nobody noticed and cared what he had to say. You know, he was the bucket of warm spit. Carrie Lake actually, you know, gets some attention. Good looking woman, you know, a firebrand, got crazy stuff to say, could get the base all tingly in the panties. So I said, you know, there's no way Trump takes her because she would detract from his star. She would make people turn away from Donald and to her, and you can't have that. So when I saw this story today that the Trump advisors are going, you know, at the heart of Trump's frustration is that, you know, she always wants attention. She's a spotlight hound, and she always wants attention. And Trump can't have that. Because Trump always wants attention. He is an attention hound. And I got to think it goes back to his childhood. There's a part of me that goes, you know, it wasn't hugged, wasn't breastfed, wasn't loved. I don't know, but it just seems it is what it is. But when folks were going, she's never going to be the candidate. You're going to find someone who's boring to go along with him because he's got to be the center of attention. You never pick someone as your number two who should have been the number one. I think John Kerry, John Edwards. Kerry choosing Edwards was a, you know, not a great choice because Edwards was much more interesting than John Kerry, which is why Al Gore, who was quite boring, chose Trader Joe Lieberman. Just is what it is. Want to hear your thoughts, though? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1988. That was the day 167 oil workers were killed in the Piper Alpha oil rig explosion in the North Sea. It is considered the world's deadliest oil rig accident ever. Around 10 p.m., the platform essentially turned into a fireball so massive, rescue helicopters could not get near it. Gas lines ruptured when the night crew accidentally activated a gas pump down for repairs. Immediately, the platform was rocked with explosions, first wiping out the control room, then engulfing it in flames. The platform split into two. Its oil derrick toppled. Most were killed instantly, as the crew's quarters were directly above the gas compression module. Toxic fumes overcame others. Some jumped 100 feet into the sea. The platform was completely destroyed. It took 3 weeks to bring the fire under control. Occidental Petroleum later admitted the rig's design was fundamentally flawed, but many considered the explosion nothing short of industrial murder. The rig was notorious for fatalities and near misses. Jack Malloy, head of the offshore trade union OILC, recalled, "Piper was synonymous with accidents. People would say, 'Piper? Oh, you don't want to go there. That place is ready to go.'" Conditions were so bad, the union pulled its reps off the safety committee. The next day, 115 oil workers in Humberside walked off the job, demanding better health and safety conditions. Subsequent investigations determined Occidental failed to enforce basic maintenance and safety procedures. Over 100 safety improvements were recommended. Occidental paid out $100 million to the families, but escaped prosecution. Today, there is a memorial chapel at the Kirk of St. Nicholas and a memorial sculpture in the Rose Garden of Hazelhead Park, both in Aberdeen, Scotland.
Two pieces of good advice. Never sign nothing by neon. And never negotiate with snakes. But Joe Biden violated both rules this year, getting out-negotiated by Senate Republicans and their tag-along Democrat, Joe Manchin. As a result, Biden completely surrendered an urgently needed program for America, universal child care. The U.S. child care system is broken at every level. Availability is scarce, and even if parents can find an opening, the price is forbidding. Yet, care providers and teachers are grossly underpaid. So we're doomed by corporate greed and Washington's indifference, right? Wrong. Grassroots people across the country are demanding and getting real change at the state level. Last year, for example, voters in New Mexico rallied a decade-long care rebellion to put a landmark initiative on the ballot to guarantee that all children ages 0 to 5 have a constitutional right to quality early childhood education. Moreover, Amendment 1 allocates a steady stream of money from New Mexico's land-grant permanent fund to make this promise real. The vote initiative passed with 70% of the vote. Vermont, led by such persistent grassroots groups as Let's Grow Kids, is providing $130 million a year to establish a solid base for universal child care. Last month, the Republican governor vetoed the funding provision. But a bipartisan legislative majority, prodded by public demand, has now voted to override the veto. Also, the red state legislature in Tennessee is providing a new and essential child care benefit to low-income parents of infants and toddlers, diapers. And even some in the U.S. Congress are beginning to get the child care message, having formed the first ever Congressional Dads Caucus to push family-friendly policies. This is Jim Hightower saying, when leaders won't lead, the people must shove them out of the way.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday on the program, we talked about this 16-year-old in, it's Wisconsin now. Yesterday, I thought it was Michigan, but it's on the Michigan border, but it's in Wisconsin, where this 16-year-old kid was killed in a logging accident or in a hardwood logging facility. We don't know what the details are yet, but we know a 16-year-old is somewhere in the logging industry, which is the most dangerous industry in this country. More people die, get hurt, all of that stuff in the logging industry than any other place. So what's a 16-year-old doing? And I know, teaching responsibility, getting work ethic. Yeah. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on this story and, you know, where sadly we may be going. I've asked our good friend Jordan Barab to come talk with us. Jordan was a former acting assistant secretary and deputy assistant secretary of labor for OSHA during the Obama years. He does an incredible, incredible blog, jordanbarab.com/confined spaces. You will find all of the horrible things that happen. And, you know, somebody at least is bringing this attention. Jordan, thanks for taking time for us.
Sure. Glad to be here.
So I'm looking at this story of this 16-year-old kid. I have no idea why a 16-year-old kid is in an industry that is as dangerous as this one is. Any insight?
No, I mean, you know, we have a lot of states, Wisconsin, Iowa, and many others who are lowering, you know, standards and requirements for young workers. And, you know, is it because of the alleged labor shortage or just because they want to pay them less? You know, the Iowa law actually exempts them from any kind of liability as well. So basically what they're finding is in these young people, what employers are finding is a very vulnerable workforce, workers who don't know their rights, if they have any rights being so young. And if they know, even if they know their rights, they're afraid to assert their rights. You know, it's their first job. What do they know?
Yeah.
They don't know if they're dangerous. You know, if they're not trained, they don't know if they're dangerous. You know, it's prime fodder, you know, for exploitive reporters. I'm sorry, exploitive employers. But unfortunately, you know, these are the most vulnerable workers, and they're getting killed. I mean, you know, you mentioned the one in the sawmill a few weeks ago. Another 16-year-old was killed in a landfill. We're not quite sure of the details there, but obviously, you know, I used to work for AFSCME. We used to represent landfill workers. I mean, these are incredibly dangerous jobs, moving equipment and, you know, dangerous machinery, toxic chemicals. I mean, you don't want to be working there as an adult, much less having your 16-year-old kid work there.
Yeah. And as I've been saying, Jordan, that, you know, the sad reality is we're now a society where you almost have to have three incomes to get by. I mean, there was my grandparents' generation where one income could support a family. There was a period, you know, in the 70s, 80s, 90s, where it was two incomes. Now I think we're at that three income threshold where you got to push the kids out in the workforce if you want to stay in the house and put food on the table.
Yeah, that, or if you know you want to go to college and God forbid get out of college without a crippling debt, you know, you want to make some good money, you know, and I'm sure these jobs, you know, to put their lives at risk, probably pay some decent money, but you know, is it worth it at that age to you know, risk your life, you know, when you should be working in a supermarket or babysitting and you know, hopefully going to, you know, a college that you can afford.
No, I wish that were the case. But, you know, when we talked with the one state rep in Iowa, Sammy Sheets, who was on a construction site and found 12-year-olds working in there, they weren't making big money.
No.
You've literally got 12-year-olds in a construction site. And this is what the Iowa law is, I guess, bringing us.
Yeah. Well, they're, you know, the Iowa law disguises them as, you know, apprentices or student learners. You know, it's just a way of trying to get around federal law. And we'll see. Hopefully that won't work because ultimately federal law should preempt state law. But they're trying for all these loopholes, you know, with apprenticeships and things like that. But the fact is the work is the same. The hazards are the same and kids are dying.
I want to unpack that for a second because, you know, right when this came out, we talked about it extensively. That what the state was allowing to happen is basically the companies to have immunity if any of these kids get hurt on the job, because it's an apprenticeship program. It's approved by the school. So, you know, maybe the school's liable or maybe nobody's liable and kids get hurt, maimed, killed, and nobody's responsible. That seems clever.
Yeah. And even for workers' comp, I mean, companies already get away with a lot with workers' comp. You know, you can't sue your employer because you have to go through workers' comp, you know, and now these kids don't even have those rights.
Well, average workers don't have the right to sue their employer either, because we gave up our constitutional right to access to the courts because of the grand bargain. And sadly, what's happened over the last several decades is employers have gotten further and further away from being responsible. I know here in Pennsylvania, the laws have been weakened over the decades to where, you know, God help you if you get hurt on the job in this state.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a state by state race to the bottom. I mean, that's part of the problem with workers' comp, is it's a state by state program. So, you have this race to the bottom where every state is trying to weaken their workers' comp laws more than the state next door to attract more business. That's why we have federal programs like OSHA and federal programs like Wage and Hour, which hopefully, you know, can actually set national standards, so you don't have the kind of race to the bottom that we're seeing with workers' comp.
I like the way you put that, hopefully, because, you know, I'm sure you, like I, have been watching our Supreme Court, and it seems like there's no law that's decided. There's nothing that they won't overturn or make up out of whole cloth. And I fear we're heading so far backwards to somewhere in a worse place than the Lochner era, that these child labor law things stand, that, you know, more attacks on workers' comp and all, you know, all of the 20th century are allowed to happen.
Yeah. Well, you know, when Donald Trump was elected, he brought one of his main advisors, there was a guy named Steve Bannon, who we all know, who I think was in jail for a while before Trump pardoned him. But his goal, and he stated it right out front, his goal was what he called deconstructing the administrative state. And the administrative state, you know, to them is basically all of the laws, all of the agencies that protect workers, that protect consumers, that protect the environment. You know, OSHA, Wage and Hour, EPA, Consumer Product Safety Commission. What he's trying to do, and what business is trying to do, and what the court is chipping away from, although they haven't quite made the final blow yet, what they're trying to take away are these agencies' authority to really set the kind of standards that Congress originally gave them when they passed these laws. And now you have Congress kind of, you know, I mean, again, they're just creating stuff out of thin air, like their so-called major questions doctrine. You know, that major questions doctrine, you know, the Supreme Court decides, well, you know, Congress may have given OSHA discretion to do this, but it's kind of a big issue. So really, they should go back to Congress to get authority for that. And you're seeing this all over the place. You're seeing legislation now called, you know, one bill called the RAINS Act, which the House has passed, which would say that no agency can issue any standards or regulations, EPA, OSHA, unless Congress approves them. And we all know what Congress is, especially with Republicans, is best at doing, you know, nothing. So yeah. These agencies can be working for years on regulations that protect the public or protect workers. And if Congress doesn't say, all right, we approve those, which obviously they're not going to do, it's all for naught. We don't have any regulations. We don't have any protections.
And what's interesting to me is, again, you know, all I hear from my Republican friends is job killing regulations. You're killing jobs, Jordan.
Yeah. And, you know, all the studies that have been done about that, you know, show just the opposite. I mean, safety, you know, I mean, big companies know this. There's some good companies that know this. But, you know, it's not good business to be injuring and killing your workers. Unless you have an infinite supply of workers to come in, and that's what happens. That's what's happening now with the low income workers or kids, for that matter.
Yep.
You know, one gets hurt, one gets killed. There's always plenty more to bring in there. And if they're low skilled, you're not losing anything.
And especially if they're kids. I mean, at the end of the day, now look, they're not going to be your kids or my kids. We know who they're going to be, and they're exploitable. They're desperate and, you know, ripe for the picking. And that's, you know, that's where federal laws or state laws, for that matter, are supposed to step in and protect kids from these kind of low road employers. It's infuriating. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Jordan Barab. Jordan's a former acting assistant secretary and deputy assistant secretary of labor for OSHA. Also, make sure you check out his website, jordanbarab.com/confined spaces. This is a must to go to site if you care about working people. Now, what I want to go back to for a second is because, you know, I say all the time, you know, Republicans hate working people. Look at what they do. Not the rhetoric that comes out of their mouth. And I go, OSHA was put into law by Richard Nixon, a Republican. This could never happen today, but there was a time in the past where you didn't have Republicans as bad as they are today. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, you used to have kind of a bipartisan consensus, you know, that you know, workers need basic protection, and you know, health and safety protection and wage and hour protection. There were moderate Republicans back in the day. I know it's hard to remember that now, that kind of agreed that you needed these kind of laws. I mean, obviously there was the fight about how strong to make them and that type of thing, but there was a general consensus that these laws were needed. And that consensus, I think, you know, stayed. I mean, there was always, you know, all the way back to the Carter administration, there were accusations that OSHA was killing jobs, but it was really, you know, kind of the Newt Gingrich Congress that really started to, you know, hold this anti-regulatory stuff and make it as important as it was, as it's become, and made OSHA kind of the public enemy number one with its ergonomic standards, which they finally repealed. And ever since then, you know, OSHA has been, EPA has been, wage and hour have been, you know, public enemy number one. And you've unfortunately seen the effects of that. You know, you have all of these agencies, especially OSHA and wage and hour, are incredibly understaffed. I mean, very small agencies, tiny agencies. I mean, OSHA's entire budget is only about $632 million, which is incredibly small considering their mandate. I mean, they have the mandate to protect the health and safety of 158 million workers and 10.9 million workplaces with a very, you know, tiny budget. And wage and hours budget is even smaller. And they're the ones that are supposed to be policing workplaces for, you know, child labor and wage theft and things like that. They have nowhere near the resources to be able to do the job that Congress gave them. And now you have not only Republicans in Congress, but the courts trying to take away, you know, whatever authority they have.
Which is why on the wage theft front, what is it? Wage theft accounts for 10 times what all of the robberies and all the stick-up gas station jobs and all of the theft combined. It's like 10 times the much. But you never see employers go to jail for robbing their workers. It's because it's not in front. It's not front and center, Jordan. It's not one of the things that we see on the evening news.
Yep. And then you see these. I mean, these crazy things that, you know, the employers, they get, some of them get caught, but, you know, for everyone that gets caught, there are probably 100 out there that don't get caught. I mean, one hired someone to be a fake priest and take workers' confessions about, you know, any crimes they may have committed in the workplace. I mean, luckily, wage and hour caught up with them. I mean, you had another one where a worker was complaining he hadn't gotten his final paycheck. You know, I can't remember how many thousands of dollars it was, but basically the employer said, fine. You know, the worker complained. There was a ruling against the employer. The employer said, fine, and delivered the last paycheck in pennies on the worker's driveway. So, I mean, even, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, trying to chase these things down, trying to become aware of them, having enough staff and resources to enforce them, and being constantly under attack in the courts, you know, which means you need lawyers, you need to hire lawyers. I mean, you know, it's very frustrating. And, you know, again, people are getting cheated and they're getting killed because of it.
Lastly, I want to get your thoughts on, you know, because as I've said a moment ago, I believe Republicans hate working people. Again, look at what they do. The Texas governor signs this Death Star bill. And within days, you've got, you know, a postal worker who dies on the job. You've got other workers who are dying on the job because the ultimate preemption bill went and undid breaks for people in high temperature areas. And it immediately cost people their lives.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the workers that died there wouldn't have been covered by the, you know, the ordinance that the governor, you know, would be repealing. But I mean, if you're a politician or a governor in a state and you pretend to care about people and you pretend to care about workers, and you see workers in your state dying of heat, you know, because they aren't given the breaks and they aren't given the water, wouldn't you think you would, you know, look into maybe strengthening worker protections instead of weakening them? I mean, you know, in the face of death, they're going the opposite way, and they're just ensuring that more workers will die. It's just incredible. And why people don't vote these people out of office, you know, lock, stock, and barrel, I just, you know, really don't understand, because they're so blatantly, you know, anti, not just anti-worker, but, you know, pro-death. You know, it should be obvious to everyone.
Yeah, and again, for me, these are election issues. So the always question I end up with is, what do we do? How do we fix this? How do we? Because look, I haven't met any working person who goes, yeah, I want to be less safe at work. Yeah, I want to be killed on the job. I want to be injured and maimed. Most people I know are like, no, I want to be safe. I want to go home to see my wife and kids. I want to be able to spend the fruits of my labor. What do we do?
Well, you know, Rick, I mean, we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, back, you know, when Richard Nixon signed the Occupational Safety and Health Act and there were moderate Republicans then. The other difference between now and 50 years ago is you had much stronger unions and workers, you know, who were much more organized. And if you're in a union, you have much better protections against any kind of exploitation, including, you know, your health and safety on the job. I mean, if you're looking at, you're trying to tell people what to do now, I mean, obviously, you know, voting these, you know, worker hating Republicans out of office. I mean, that's the obvious first step, but also organizing unions and, you know, collectively acting, you know, joining whatever worker groups, organizing groups, and obviously labor unions, because ultimately, you know, even the people that founded OSHA understood that the Occupational Safety and Health Administration would never be big enough or powerful enough to guarantee the health and safety of workers all over the country. And that law gave workers a lot of rights in the law. But back then, it was kind of assumed that workers would have, you know, unions and they would be able to use these rights through their unions. Now they don't have those unions. And it's very difficult, you know, for workers even to use the rights that they've been given in the law because they, you know, they're afraid of retaliation or they don't know about their rights or they aren't trained about the hazards they have because they don't belong to unions.
That's an excellent point. It really is. And this is where, again, I talk about strengthening unions and people joining and forming unions. But also we've got to save the laws that we have and the agencies that we've got to help us fight for, you know, for the vulnerable, for the 16-year-old kid who's in a sawmill. You know, I was talking to a friend the other day who had said, you know, years ago, that in these sawmills, there was a kid, he was doing research for a book, and there was an 8-year-old kid that got killed in one of these sawmills. And what they used to do, this is years ago, they would send these small kids in to clean out the sawdust so they would never have to turn off the blades. So you've got these 8-year-old kids crawling in there. Now, again, I don't think we're that bad yet. And the key word being yet, but I think we could be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, right now we're seeing where they, you know, they'll send immigrant workers, especially undocumented immigrant workers, into incredibly dangerous jobs because they know they won't complain about it. They may not even be aware of the hazards, and you know, if they get killed, so what? You know, their body gets shipped back to Latin America. You know, it's the same thing with kids. They're not going to complain about it. They don't know. I mean, they're willing to take the risks. You know, unfortunately, we're seeing what happens there. It's just a new exploitable group of quote unquote workers.
There you go. Jordan, I appreciate the time. Hope folks will check out the website, jordanbarab.com/confined spaces. Also look at the rest of the state. Lots of great stuff there. But Jordan, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Rick. Been a pleasure.
Again, check out the website, jordanbarab.com. We'll get links out on social media. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1911. That was the day that the song "The Preacher and the Slave" first appeared in the Little Red Songbook. The Little Red Songbook was a compilation of labor songs published by the Industrial Workers of the World Union. The booklet was pocket-sized so labor activists could carry it with them wherever they would go. Music was an important part of the IWW labor culture. Joe Hill was probably the most well-known of the IWW songwriters. Many of the songs penned during this era are still sung at labor rallies and meetings today. But not everyone appreciated the music and the message of the IWW, a radical union that called for all workers to unite together. When IWW activists, or Wobblies as they were called, would give speeches, they would sometimes be heckled and jeered. Authorities would harass and break up meetings. Sometimes, Salvation Army brass bands that were competing for space and audiences on street corners would disrupt IWW rallies with their music. Joe Hill wrote his song, The Preacher and the Slave, in response to this musical disruption. He set the lyrics to the tune of the hymn In the Sweet By and By. Often, IWW songwriters satirized hymns played by the Salvation Army, which the Wobblies dubbed the Starvation Army. The lyrics tell of long-haired preachers who tell workers to stop agitating because they will eat by and by. The song was a critique of religious leaders who did not help working people. It became one of the most popular Joe Hill tunes.
Long-haired preachers come out every night. They try to tell you what's wrong.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know, I remember back when I was in high school, I wrote a paper on OSHA. The 1970 OSHA Act and how Richard Nixon was the champion of it. And I think today, you know, it's impossible to get any worker protection anywhere legislatively done. Now, I know here in Pennsylvania, the Pennsylvania State House has moved a piece of legislation that would protect public sector workers, kind of like a public sector version of OSHA. I don't think it's going to get through the Senate, but it's one of those things that, you know, it's possible. It's possible. Maybe I think there's a governor who would sign it in this state, but there aren't Republicans who go, yeah, we need to protect workers. And this is the thing that blows my mind, because, you know, the people who die on the job, the people who get injured on the job, nobody cares if they're Democrats or Republicans, if they wear the red hat or the blue hat. Their families are screwed. And that's the unfortunate reality in this country. You get hurt on the job, you're done. You're screwed. Yeah, they'll pay a little bit of money. You'll get, you know, a portion of your income here in this state. You're only guaranteed 500 weeks. And then they can cut you off onto your own. And there's no health care, there's no pension, there's none of that stuff. And, you know, how do you raise a family like that? How do you support a family with that kind of scenario? What we've allowed to happen. You know, I call it the no rights at work agenda. They start off with right to work laws because we don't need them stinking unions. And then they go after unemployment. They cut down the number of weeks. They cut down the benefit. They cut all that and make the obstacles, you know, so hard to get in front of. Then they go after workers' compensation. Of course, got to gut that because, hey, we need to compete. So the states with the weakest protections for working people are where corporate America wants to go. We never talk about that. We never hear about the fact that, you know, workers are killed every day in this country. You know, some 5,000 plus killed every year. People who got up in the morning, brushed their teeth, kissed their babies, had their breakfast, drove off to work, and did not come home. Or the thousands, you know, what do they say? It's, you know, 90 to 100,000 people die from occupational illnesses where they were exposed to something, took it home. And over the years, it ended up killing them. And we've got politicians, Republicans, say who it is, who are okay with that. They would be the same ones who back when, before workers' compensation became the law of the land, who when you would sue, because you used to be able to sue the company because that was... You have the right to sue for anything, you know, over $20 and have a trial by jury. And they would say, look, you know, it's your fault. You knew the risks. You knew what you were doing. You put yourself in a dangerous position. You made the choice to work for this employer in horrible, depressed, dangerous conditions. That's your fault. And they would stack juries with people who thought just like that. Because, of course, we're going to have, you know, some working people go, yeah, you know, I work in those conditions safe. It's never going to happen to me until it does. And then you have families who are out, basically out in the street. And these companies were getting away with you know, killing thousands, tens of thousands of workers. OSHA, workers' comp, all of this, all of the advancements of the 20th century made that better. Made it better to where, you know, most people now expect to come home at the end of the day. Most people expect to come home in the condition they went to work in. That wasn't always the case. And it's because of the policies that we moved. It's because of the decisions that were made by statesmen. Not Marjorie Trainwreck Greene and her, you know, holler monkey screed. Not Matt.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.